Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 515, recording today live on Wednesday, the 29th of November. God, we're nearly into December. I cannot believe that. It is insanely... December is almost here. This is the Music and Technology Podcast. We talk all about music and technology and controllers and software, all kinds of things. I don't know if the Facebook live stream is going. It seems to have gone black, but... as I'm in the middle of it, we'll just have to wait and see. Anyway, so want to say hello to the people in the chat room. They're in the YouTube chat room. Hi, everybody. And also everybody in the IRC chat room there, which I've tried to reconstruct on the new computer, but it hasn't quite come out the same way. So I'm sorry if that's a little bit unfamiliar. I want to say thank you very much to our show sponsoring the competition, Isotope. We'll be giving away a copy of... Ozone 8, of course, which is we're very pleased about. In fact, I'm using Neutron 2 on the output of this because we're streaming with via our new streaming PC, and the plugin is across the master out. So hopefully that will kind of keep the level of it all beautiful and all of those things. Anyway, so let's say hello to a few guests. I'm going to start with you, Mark, because we haven't seen you for ages. Mr. Mark Tinley, Sonus Magus, running a kind of unusual music store in Glastonbury, and you just moved premises, right?
I did. It's taken about 8 weeks to do it. But yeah, I've moved from the back of this kind of very strange little mews right to the front. So I'm actually bang on the high street now, which is nice. And it's changed the nature of the shop somewhat. So in that I've got all sorts of different customers coming in, yeah.
Has it actually meant you just get a lot more people in and sales are up and all of those graphs are going in the right direction?
Do you know what? I've been running that shop for about a year and a half, and I moved into this shop on October the 1st, and November this year is the first month where I've gone over breaking even, so it must have made a difference because the rent significantly higher in the new shop, so there must be enough sales to cover the rent and for me to even pay myself some money, so I might buy myself a gift or something.
Woohoo! Well, awesome.
Celebrate. So yeah, so it's good, actually. It is really good. It's much more visible. The kinds of people who are coming in are much more willing to spend money and sort of looking at some of my cheaper guitars and going, is that the most expensive thing you've got? And I'm thinking, well, in the other shop, when I was hard to find, it was like, well, no, sorry, mate, 50 quid for a guitar, I can't afford that. Have you got anything cheaper? So yeah, it has made a huge difference.
Excellent. Well, I'm very pleased to hear that. And always good to hear success stories going along the way. If you want to find out more about what Mark's up to, sonusmagus.com. We've got a slightly different font. I haven't moved all my fonts over to this new machine, so you'll have to bear with me as the continuity officer will be kicking
Mark,
my...
Didn't he?
Sorry? No,
you've
it's all right.
My,
it's not. It's quite... Don't worry about it.
Right,
honestly,
okay.
It's all fine. Say hello to Mr. Gaz Williams as well. Gaz Williams there, gazwilliams.me, bass player, music technologist, and producer and mastering guy, all of those things. How are you doing, Gaz?
Yeah, good, thank you. Kind of good. I went to grab my headphones earlier that were plugged into my Electron Analog 4 and pulled the headphones out.
Oh, that one.
Yeah,
I can mend that for you.
That's a nightmare. Yeah, you'll have to take it.
I can fix that. Bring it in.
Too grabby.
At least you didn't put it on the floor like you did with the microphone.
Yeah, that's true. Well, Gaz, please have it. Yeah. You're in the middle of a session, right? So, what's your client doing? Having a prolonged tea break?
Yeah, he's. We just ran off some mixes, so he's checking off mixes downstairs. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Excellent. Pleased to hear it. Anyway, and also we say hello to Mr. Rich Hilton, who is there in Connecticut. Rich Hilton, of course, a keyboard player with Chic, and also mans the studio for Mr. Nile Rodgers, working at the highest level with the highest caliber musicians on the highest caliber records, I presume, too. How are you, Rich?
Very well, thank you. Very
good.
Well.
I'm glad to hear.
I just discovered that these aren't working very well, so I've replaced them for the day.
Oh, that's a shame.
figure that out offline.
Offline? Oh no, that's a bit of a drag. What can we say?
No, I mean, I have to figure out what's wrong with the right side of those when I am not talking to you.
Yeah, I know that feeling. There's lots of things that happen during a show where I think I must try and fix that, but obviously I can't. Like, for instance, there's no video on the Facebook feed, and I have no idea why that is. But hey, what can I say? It's just the way things go. I think we have video. Let's just see if we got video. Yeah, looks like we got video there. Anyway, so what I wanted to say was... Black Friday, Cyber Monday, all of that stuff. You had Thanksgiving, of course, in the US. Everybody had a bit of a break, which is nice. It seemed like a frenzy. We ran a blog, and there was a lot of interest on it. First of all, did anyone buy anything on Black Friday? I'm going to start with you, Mark. Did you go for a Black Friday deal, which, even though it's supposed to be a one-day sale, seems to just last for ages, right?
I nearly did, and then I didn't. I was going to buy myself a new iPhone with 64 gigabytes, and then I just went, I don't really need one of those. But I've been bombarded with them, these emails.
Yeah, they're everywhere, aren't they?
The day before Black Friday, Black Week, Black Weekend, and then there's, what's Cyber Monday? What is that? Because that seems to be the Monday after Black Friday.
Correct. I have absolutely no idea what it's for. It's just something somebody made up.
I went and lived in America for a bit in the 1980s, and at the end of the 1980s, I remember the Black Friday sale and people kind of queuing up outside electronics stores for hours and hours and hours, and then buying huge TVs for a dollar and stuff like that. And they were just basically clearing stock, and it all kind of made sense to me. But we seem to have lost the plot on it a bit, don't we? It's just like... Because it's become a global phenomena when it was really an American thing, and then it's just kind of, I don't know, why?
And also it sort of kickstarts that, you know, retailing is something that it ebbs and flows. But yeah, okay. Anybody else? Rich, did you make any purchases for the holiday sales season?
I did. I don't think any of them related to any of the things we, you know, talk about. I bought a Christmas gift. You know, I bought some clothes, things here and there, but nothing related to software or any of that stuff, even though there were a lot of really, really great deals. But as to the how and why of Black Friday, it's a long tradition in America. I guess you guys know that. It didn't used to have a name. It just used to be the biggest retail day of the year, the day after Thanksgiving, because everybody had it off from work and people would run sales and everybody would run and go shopping and go to the movies and go to the restaurants and such.
Yeah.
I guess I see that it's been adopted elsewhere. And the simple reason why is because they see that it's successful here and they want to make money too. And as Nick points out, it elongates the holiday buying season, which is for most retail businesses a huge part of their yearly income. So anything they can do to elongate that season is productive for them in terms of business. So that's how and why.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It seemed that there were a lot of software deals, weren't there? I mean, I was kind of fishing. Yeah. I was trying to find as many hard, because in previous years, we've done this for maybe 3 or 4 years now. In previous years, there's been a lot more hardware stuff. And I think possibly it's because people aren't stocking as many things, so they're not having many things around to hold, you know, in stock to try and shift, apart from the really big retailers. There were a lot on Sweetwater and the big guys, but in terms of sort of maybe the smaller ones, there didn't seem quite so much of it. And I know, maybe that's one thing, but I'm just trying to think if there's any. Let's see. Gaz, did you make any unwise or wise purchase? No. God, you resisted.
No. Yeah. There were some really good deals that were in America only. That was me. Grumbly about. I was quite interested in Moog Minotaur because that looks really cool now, especially with the recent update. But that was on, there was some really good deals over at Moog actually. Moog
30% off, they were doing.
Yeah, so yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I'm a little bit overburdened with things at the moment. And I'm just obsessing about Electron stuff, and they weren't in the sale. So So no.
Oh, that's disappointing, isn't it, when that happens and you really, really want something specific and you can't have it because it's just not there.
Yeah. Although I saw there were some amazing ones. In America, again, you could get the analog drive, the Electron distortion pedal with the 8 different distortion circuits for about $200, I think it was, or $220. It's like, oh, that's a good one. But no, I didn't buy anything this time. So, bye.
Oh, well, I feel I've plenty to offer this particular topic then, because
hooray!
First thing I bought was an Amazon Echo Dot. Actually, I shouldn't show this because I bought this for my daughter for Christmas and I thought I'd set it up and see how it worked. And it's actually pretty cool. I think it was Amazon said it was the biggest selling thing. And I also thought that I'd do it for research, because when I came over to see you guys and we said, play Sonic Talk, it said it couldn't find it. So I submitted it. You have to submit your podcast to TuneIn and then it becomes part of it. So let's just try that. This would be very meta, wouldn't it? But sadly, Alexa, play Sonic Talk podcast.
I could not find a program named Sonic Talk.
Yeah, so that was that. No. So that was that. And I don't know why it is, because it's there. So, but what I have been doing is listening to audiobooks, so I can just sort of say, oh, play my current audiobook, and it knows where I am on my phone and just carries on listening to it. And then when I get home, I can listen to it on my phone, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I'm still trying to figure out what it can be useful for and all those things. I also bought a second Sonos Play 1 speaker, which I haven't opened yet, because I got one for the house and it's really good. And they went up quite a lot of money and they were doing a 25% off. So that's what I did. So I did avail myself of some Black Friday stuff. But yeah, it was very software heavy, but I suppose that makes sense because it's easy to promote. We did do a little promo on T-shirts. Which I think is now over, unfortunately. I was going to try and plug it on the show, but I realised I didn't have time to set up a new campaign and what have you. So that was good. Anyway, so Black Friday's done for the year. I don't know how a lot of these sales go on. I know Universal Audio are doing one right through till 12th of December, where they're introducing a new deal every day, or the 12 days of I can't remember what it is. And there's lots
of Black Month.
But yeah, I'm not quite sure what it was called, actually. I've forgotten. But they're doing plenty of deals there, and they've got, as we know, lots of plugins. So it seems to be very plug-in heavy, and that's good, because I hope, hopefully it means that people get a bit of a bump in their own sales. Anyway, let's get on. Let's try a topic. That's right, this is the Eventide Mangle Verb, which is kind of distortion and reverb combined.
Mangled verb.
I mean, those are fairly extreme examples. It's hard to know exactly what you might use. Essentially, it's taken from the H9 plugin series. What they seem to be doing is they take favorite algorithms from the H9 and they're bringing them out in plugin form in kind of package, which is actually a fairly smart thing to do, because as we know, Eventide are all about the algorithms and they generally repackaging them and turning them into other products. And I think the thing is, let me have a look, I think it's $49, so it's still pretty cheap. And some of the examples are much less extreme and more interesting, and I think it is an interesting thing that there's some ones with on bass, you know, reverb on bass, distorted reverb on bass. Actually, it sounds pretty good. So, you know, go crazy. I know, Rich, you were, you've been a fan. I mean, you know, we've talked about Eventide stuff before. I mean, their algorithms are just, you know, pretty awesome, really. Is this something that you would find space in your life for? Although it does seem to take up a lot of space if you're using distorted reverb audio, sonically speaking, that is.
Sure. Why not? It seems like it's designed to do drastic things easily and quickly. And sometimes you need to do that. So in that sort of doing drastic things easily and quickly department, I would think it's very good.
Excellent.
It sounded great in the demos.
When Niall shouts, Rich, I need a distorted reverb, you could just go, I've got just the thing, and there it is.
More like when you're mixing and you want some kind of an effect that defines a section and makes things sound cool for a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, you know, I've done things that sound kind of like what some of the demos of this thing sound like using other means, but it's cool that you can do it right there and that they have a whole sure they got 1,000 presets that all do drastic things, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're a great company, and I think that, you know, anybody who likes that sort of drastic effect thing could benefit from this.
Excellent. Mark, I'm guessing this might be right up your street. I'm sure I've heard tracks of yours which are fairly distorted and not maybe so reverby, but, you know, you can combine the two in one lovely single place, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. It sort of sounds like sounds that I would like to make with distortions and reverbs, although I might put a filter in between the distortion and the reverb. I would hope that it's got a nice peaky resonant filter somewhere in between those two things. But can you put the distortion after the reverb? That's a good question. And I don't know. I mean, it makes it very simple for somebody that wants those kinds of sounds to access those kinds of sounds without learning how to do plugin chains and all that sort of stuff, I suppose. So, and I think it should be called manglioverb, shouldn't it? It should be pronounced manglioverb.
Well, you could probably, if you've got a little bit of, if you've got a marker pen, you could quite easily change that E into an I, or no, the D and D and an O. You could say it's pretty much manglio verb anyway with the font they're using. So
okay, maybe it could be, hey man, angle, verb. Let's get Leo verb. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it could be.
I think the ADHD's kicked in.
Gas.
Yeah, well, I've got a H9 on my pedal board, and so I've been playing around with these, and so I've got these algorithms anyway, and yeah, of course, wonderful. I mean, what can you say about Eventide? The H9 is I call it my infinity pedal, really, because you just can't get to the bottom of it. It's such a vast pedal, and of course, the thing you've got to remember when you're using like the H9 is any parameters you want, you can map to the, to the hot switch or to the, you know, to, in my case, I use it with an expression pedal. So you can, you know, excuse me, you can use map the drive and the reverb depth or whatever you want and create some really interesting, some interesting movements there. And what's super, I haven't actually tried this as a plugin, but I'm going to assume, well, of course it's going to work the same, there's something really nice about Eventide for digital effects, is that when you change the parameters, they're always very smooth, and in terms of digital artifacts or kind of glitching, it's really great for not glitching for
that's unusual for time-based stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really rewarding to sort of play around with. And it's mangled verb. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's one of the... I mean, I've got the H9 Max, which is the one that's kind of fully loaded. So in a way, you get a little bit spoiled for choice, really. So this mangled verb has been sitting in my effects, only ever having had very brief sort of dalliances with it so far. But it's really interesting seeing this process of studio racks then getting fed into guitar pedal and then from guitar pedal into a plugin of a strange path. I don't think I've seen that sort of thing before, really, but it's quite cheap, isn't it?
I suppose, yeah, it's only $49. I've just got a quick interjection here. Redwalk said, Professor Mang is a famous German plastic surgeon. There we go. Just thought I'd throw that in there for no other reason other than it was there in the chat room. Excellent.
Can I just say, for me, putting effects pedals in the middle of effects chains is a completely normal thing to do, and I've always done it, and I've not ever impedance matched or level matched or anything. So, like, when you've got a +4 thing driving a guitar pedal, you can get some hideous results, and it's always good fun.
What was meaning though, Mark, I think was, you know, in terms of developing, you know, it's something that's available just in rack units, then it gets turned into a, you know, in terms of product and marketing, it gets turned into a pedal, and then from a pedal it then gets, because I think the originally, is it from the H3000?
Yeah, I would think so.
Right, so it's just Yeah, I mean, I never thought I'd ever be able to afford an Eventide unit. You know, years ago, they were just the most sought after, most, you know, expensive pieces of kit. And,
you know, the H9 is definitely well worth getting if you're interested in pedals and stuff. I don't, you know, it's almost like the ultimate, well, I think it's the ultimate digital pedal. And when I'm doing sessions, I use the the iPad editor. So I have a music stand set up. I have the iPad editor sat on the music stand. And that's where it's really great then, because, you know, all those parameters, you're not having to bend over and fiddle with it. You just got them there. It's really good. Really, really, really good. Love it.
Does it connect? It connects via Bluetooth, doesn't it? Is that right?
Connects via Bluetooth, yeah. And, yeah, it's great. I mean, some of the more recent algorithms...
You don't have cables going everywhere, and you're not going to get all tangled up in cables.
No,
you
can go anywhere. It's really nice
from anywhere.
Yeah, and so I've got like an expression pedal going into it, but you know all the expression pedal mappings. There's a kind of strip along the bottom of the interface that allows you to set any parameters on the left to any parameters on the right, so you can warp it to, you know, as many parameters as you want, basically from one point to another point. So hence why I call it an infinity pedal. The range of options is crazy. But I'm also, in my case, I'm using the H9 as the start of the clock as well, so it then spits out MIDI clock downstream to other devices. Robust.
I must say, I was thinking back when I was checking that Mangle Verb, and I did a track a while ago, well, a long time ago, 1990 something, with, and I was using distorted reverb in that. I'm just wondering if I can actually find it, because it was where it comes in. I'm just seeing if I can find it, which was, I think it might be coming up now. Here we go. Let's see if it comes in. Any second now. And I was using a MIDI Verb 2 and just driving the input really hard with a Juno. That's not it. Hold on, I'll find it. Anyway, that wasn't really, but I like the idea of, you know, driven reverbs, and some reverbs just sound lovely when you crank them up a bit, and you know, you can, it's not, you're not supposed to, and that's what I like about it, the fact that you could blow up the inputs a little bit and do all of that stuff.
I was listening to Gary Newman's album Splinter the other day, and that must be all distorted reverbs and stuff, because there's some huge atmospheric things in there, and they like really kind of do emotionally kind of moving things, and it's like sounds kind of breaking up and then disappearing into big spaces. So it's good for that kind of stuff, for those dark emotive kind of.
Absolutely. And yeah, Nine Inch Nails and all of those kind of people, that sort of stuff. Absolutely. Right. Let's get on to, let's just have a quick, let's do the competition now because we can. So, as we know, Isotope have been sponsoring the competition for quite some time now. And with Ozone 8, this is, you know, the de facto mastering suite, mastering assistant, which helps you set up for the kind of track that you're doing, make some suggested kind of patches, can also listen to the track and kind of go, this is what I think you need. And, you know, in many cases, it's a good starting point. There's also the ability to create tonal balance. Tonal balance allows you to visualize kind of the ranges of frequency bands and where your mix would sit in it if you're trying to aim for a certain sound. Maybe you're trying to compare it to another track, which you can also do from within the plugin, which is also very powerful and gives you just sort of visual guideline of how to do that. You're also able to link it up to other instances of Ozone running in your session, or Neutron 2 running in the session too. Spectral shaping, fix and mix. There are so many things that you can do with this thing that is well worth checking out if you're into mastering, or you just want to finish things up or make the mixing process even easier, because for some people it's not easy. Jump right back into mastering. There we go. In fact, I would like to point out that this show, I'm running Neutron 2 across the master output, because this new software that we've got allows me to run audio plugins to the stream. So the stream is being processed through Neutron 2. I've gone for a sort of FM radio kind of sound, which I can tweak away. But anyway, if you want to check out Ozone, Ozone 8, you go to isotope.com/ozone. And there's, as ever, there's a, I think it's a 10-day download demo, unlimited demo that you can check it all out. And we've got a competition for you this week. I'll start with the winner from last week. Last week we had we asked you to tweet intelligent mixing and Ozone 8, and we have a winner. It's a guy called Bjorn Asahed, who is on Twitter handle Bjorn_Asahed, I don't know how you pronounce that. And he said, time for some intelligent mixing, Ozone 8, Isotope Mix on its day. So congratulations to you. If you want to get in touch, you will be have a Ozone 8 bestowed upon you. I think that's the right thing to say. And we got another competition this week. We're looking for Max Your Mix is the tweet hashtag that we're looking for. Max Your Mix, one word, and the hashtag Ozone 8 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc. So if you want to win a copy of Ozone 8, I'm tripping up my words, you want to tweet the hashtag Max Your Mix and the hashtag Ozone 8 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc. And once again, we thank them very much for their competition sponsorship. Let's get on to this one. This is what happens when you send a bunch of synth heads from Erica Synths in this case and have a chat with Jean-Michel Jarre. And it's actually, it's quite long form, it's about 30 minutes. And it was quite an interesting chat. It covers a lot of things. So I think this is in his studio, unless it's in their studio, in which case, very impressive. But I think it's his studio. It looks like he's got some kind of, is that an SSL? Looks like it might be an SSL.
Yeah, sure.
Like from the modular.
The concept, I just want to explain you what this is all about.
And he talks a lot about technology and about how it influences music. And I thought it was quite an interesting chat, actually.
The source of inspiration in my life since I was a student is the gear. I mean, the technology and the instruments.
So obviously, it's a very long video, so I won't play it all, which is another one of my catchphrases, apparently. But some really interesting points, bro. I don't know if any of you had the chance to watch the whole thing or any of it, but if not, I'll start with you, Rich. So nice little video, nice, he's informal. And, you know, there's a lot of jamming in it as well, but just some interesting opinions about it. What did you make of it?
I quite enjoyed it, even where I didn't necessarily agree with what was being said. I quite enjoyed it. Seems like a very nice man. Some interesting insights, some interesting approaches. There were moments of Spinal Tap, absolute moments of Spinal Tap in this thing. There were also moments of creative brilliance in this thing. He posits that he almost comes out and says that electronic music is a European phenomenon. And as much as I have enormous regard for the early contributions of both Germany and France and the UK too, and basically all of Eastern Europe and Russia, and he cites a whole bunch of places. And I just don't think you can discount the fact that both Buchla and Moog were American. And that most of the earliest experimentations involving those kinds of instruments that are documented, at least in my life, occurred here. But other than that quibble, because I think it did actually take off far more in Europe than it did here. So other than that quibble, I quite enjoyed him and it. And I thought that would be an interesting point of discussion for us, being that we are from other ends of the earth and we would have different perspectives on it.
No, very true, very true. I thought it was kind of fascinating. I know, Gaz. I mean, you haven't seen it. Okay, well, no. There were a couple of things that he said that I think were really interesting. One was that, you know, technology has driven music throughout time. You know, he said, you know, Vivaldi's Rites of Spring, you know, would various pieces of music be written if somebody hadn't invented the violin or the piano? Or that? And I thought, yeah, that's an interesting idea, because we very much kind of, or at least I have, espoused the opinion that it's not about the gear. Well, in fact, what he's saying is it absolutely is and always has been. You know, it doesn't have to be electronic gear, but it's all absolutely about the gear, which I thought was kind of interesting as well.
Well, I mean, look at 1980s music and, you know, the prevalence of when digital reverb came about and just sort of how dominant that was and how, you know, the sampler and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, lots of examples of that. It's quite interesting from now point of view, though, isn't it? Because what examples could we use about like that now? Have we reached a point where that doesn't influence things now? I mean, have we got so much gear and with computers, so many
possibilities and opportunities that, you know, it's a lot harder for, you know, to pinpoint things in time. I mean, like his point there, you could kind of use that point and you could identify musical movements and various things to specific points in time. I wonder what are the either the devices or the inventions in like literally in the last 5 years that could pinpoint things to a moment in time.
That's interesting. I mean, I suppose, wondering. You know, we talk about maybe DSP technology, you know, pitch and, you know, pitch and time and all of those kind of things. I don't know, Mark, did you get a chance to see any of this?
I didn't have time to watch it, I'm afraid, no.
Yeah, it was 30 minutes, I guess, yeah. Sorry, I can't serve you now. I'm watching a video, yeah.
But I do notice, I've discovered lots of instruments I didn't know existed before I started that shop, and people come in and ask for all sorts of weird folk instruments. And I've been playing around with things like balalaikas and just, I mean, nothing particularly unusual, but new to me. And actually each one of those has its own form factor. And each one of those definitely dictates to a degree the style of music that you can play on it. Although I have invented slide balalaika, I think, like, you know, blues.
Excellent.
And there was a chap on the high street the other day playing a sitar with a slide, which was quite interesting as well. So
probably a lot easier to play with a slide than it is with your fingers, I'd imagine.
Yeah, but so perhaps traditionally we follow a certain path when we pick up an instrument, but if a new instrument comes out, then I'm sure that the form factor must dictate that the direction that instrument goes in, because there'll only be a certain amount of possibilities. It's not as if it's not as if something has infinite possibilities, is it? Like it's a mechanical instrument or an analog instrument, mm-hmm. is going to be like constrained by its physical properties, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, although, you know, I suppose you could cite the guitar, you know, the evolution of the guitar and what can be done with the guitar has been...
There are archaic things, aren't they? Why haven't we evolved that further?
Well, no, but it's the processing of it that has become contemporary and, you know, obviously electric guitar, amplification, rock and roll, you know, Chuck Berry and amplification, all that sort of stuff.
Oh, sure, yeah. So, I mean, the thing I notice is things like the... You know, the tuning pegs on a guitar are evolved beyond the tuning pegs on a violin, say, but they're still completely archaic. This whole idea that you've got like this metal twisty thing and a brass cog, I mean, it's just rubbish. We've got, when you look at automotive technology, you look at like modern cars and some of the innovations go into modern cars. Why aren't guitar makers going like, oh, look, that's a clever thing. Why don't I introduce that into the guitar world? And then I don't know. Yeah. Such amazing. Well,
there is one
there, and we're still stuck with these little brass cogs that just go wrong. And it's like, come on, catch up or do something.
There is a little bit of car design. Sorry, there is a car design bass guitar crossover. Actually, there's so Vernie Ball Music Man have got a model called the Bongo, which is a bass guitar. Okay. Strangely enough, but the Bongo was designed by BMW. And the designers from BMW approached Music Man, said they want to design a guitar for, you know. And it's interesting when you look at the Bongo. I mean, the Bongo is probably about 10 years old now or so, but there's a lot of design cues which are just lifted straight from the BMW sort of design sort of lexicon, if you will.
Interesting.
It's still got machine heads on it, though, hasn't it?
It does.
It's still got. Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. You're right. It's more to do with sort of styling cues and whatnot. But
yeah.
There we go.
Rich, I noticed you want to come in.
If I may bring it back to the Jean-Michel Jarre interview, because Mark remarkably stumbled onto something that is one of the main points that he made that I thought was great, which was he made it right at the beginning too, about how with electronic instruments as well as with acoustic instruments, you have to put in the time to establish a relationship with that instrument so that you develop a personal voice in the use of that instrument, which I know Mark knows because he's got a personal voice on a lot of instruments. And I thought it was one of Jarre's best points, is that that doesn't begin and end with acoustic instruments. It's true of synthesizers, too. Just leaning over and hoping to get the right thing out of the wrong synth is not going to work for you. You need to know what they do and what they sound like.
That's true. And the other thing he mentioned, that he's very much comes from a sort of mono background, you know, mono synth, monaural.
Yeah.
And he really likes that kind of thing. And in fact, you know, he goes back and talks a little bit about some of the stuff that he did, obviously, when he wasn't using the string machines and what have you, where he built things up from lots of layers of mono things. I have to say also, isn't he? I mean, he looks great. I was thinking, how old is Jean-Michel Jarre?
In fact, right, exactly.
Hold on. Alexa, how old is Jean-Michel Jarre?
Jean-Michel Jarre is 69 years old.
Can you believe that? And I found a use for my Alexa as well. 69 years old. I mean, yeah, he's looking pretty good for his age. So I don't know how he manages it. Maybe it's close proximity to all that sort of radiating electronic equipment for 45 years. Probably not. I don't know.
Preserved. Yeah.
It's preserved.
I just had another thought actually on this, and that is in terms of like synthesizers spawning genres of music, I'm pretty sure that when they decided to put a knob that could switch the LFO between tempo-based time, and it could switch between 16ths and triplets and eighths and triplets and 24ths and all that sort of stuff, that pretty much spawned dubstep, because some bright spark somewhere turned a knob and went, whoa, 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 and went, oh, that sounds good, and then made a track with it, and then everyone followed suit. So my theory is that probably came from the V-Synth, and was it Skrillex, I think, used the V-Synth, didn't he?
Could be, yeah. I don't know where it actually initially came from.
It was the FM8, maybe, but...
Gaz.
So it's all to do with interface as well. I think interfaces play a big part in where people go with their creativity and their music making.
Absolutely. Gaz, are you live fixing your Electron? Hey!
Oh, my God.
Can you get to the headphone jack from there?
No.
The headphone jack's dropped.
I have to say, it's beautifully made. I mean, it's really well made.
Please don't drop it. Please don't.
But the inside bit, where the headphone thing is in a kind of sealed... I thought I might. So I'm a little bit scuppered. So I don't know, Mark, if you know what I could do to get that.
I'll tell you. I know what you could do.
Whack a screw in it. In the scoop. In the bit of jack socket. How much of the jack socket's left in there?
Yeah, the screw. Right.
Screw something into it and extract it like a cork from a wine bottle.
Aha. So that's the little bit that
kind of... Yeah, if you have a little screw in there, you could screw that into the hole
it's the end bit that's come off.
It's the top sleeve, isn't it?
It's bizarre. I mean, it was quite a good quality pair of headphones.
Actually, the top sleeve is screwed on some of those jacks anyway. So if you can get a long enough screw in there and get in the thread and pull it back out, you might be able to do it that way.
That's a good top tip. You know, we did do a video a couple of weeks ago when you were on, Gaz, just me and you, and with the guy who was just fixing that drum machine. And I said it was quite compelling. So maybe the rest of the show could just be watching you fit now. Perhaps you won't do that. But let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
So also want to bring to your attention our Wave Junction. This is a Max for Life synthesizer. In fact, this demo has done all with the Max for Life synthesis. You can buy this directly from us. As a 10% discount code, WJTalk17, will get you 10% off what is already only 20 quid. So this thing has got two oscillators, multi-mode with wavetable, three multi-mode filters, five envelopes, five LFOs, and a 12-slot modulation matrix to boot. You do need Max for Live and Ableton to run it, or you could just run it, I guess, as a Max for Live. No, I think it has to be both. But you can head over to bit.ly/wavejunction and pick up a copy there. In fact, we've also got a free version. So if you follow that URL, there's a mono version that's free. So check that out first. And then if you like what you hear, you could get this one, which has got more features and more voices. That's the Sonic State Wave Junction synthesizer. Discount Talk, WJ Talk 17. Available now. So, what was next? Oh, I thought this was interesting.
If you're on hold,
sorry, Gaz, hold on. What? Have you done it?
Max. Oh! Yeah, Max. Thank you, Mark. That tip worked a treat.
Excellent.
So
that is awesome.
So I didn't need to open it at all. But it's,
round of applause for the live servicing there.
God, you see how lovely it was.
Now, please put it somewhere safe so it doesn't get broken.
That's true. It's just quite interesting seeing the circuitry, though, because it's the four voices. You can see the four voices here and just how small and compact everything actually is now for analog circuitry.
Electronics engineer somewhere is going to be screaming, don't put your finger on that, please.
Yeah, don't. Don't touch it.
I've not touched anything. But there we go. Thank you.
Excellent.
For that,
brilliant. A happy ending. Right, how about this?
If you're on hold to a company and they're playing music down the phone at you, the chances are it sounds terrible and sometimes it just dissolves into static. Telephone signals are not designed to carry music, and to explain why, we have to start way, way back with old telephone equipment like
this. Is a video by Tom Scott.
Early telephone calls were put through by a human operator who would be literally connecting the two phone
lines. And why does hold music sound so bad?
A big board of switches or a switchboard. Any sound at one end, whether it's speech, music, or whatever, would be converted to an electrical signal, sent down the wire, and converted back at the other end. You send music, you receive music, although it would be limited by the abilities of the tiny microphone and speaker. But telephone exchanges like this only work for small numbers of connections because, you know...
He does go on to say, basically, because it's all been digified, what's happening is there's all this compression that goes in. And if you've got a really badly designed internal network, because, I mean, we've all been there, you're on hold and the music is so... It's almost like one bit and you can't really tell what's going on. It's designed for voice compression and the hold music is just... It's almost painful to listen to. And this is why does telephone music sound so bad? And I guess this could raise a couple of things. I mean, Is it worse than music? Do people actually play decent hold music? I mean, does it matter? It's kind of helpful when they interrupt it once in a while and say, you know, you're now X in the queue, you're going to be a couple of minutes, whatever. I know. Do you notice this a lot, Rich, in the US? I don't know. I mean, I think in the US people are more likely to phone people up to find out stuff. I mean, I have a couple of US friends who spend more time on the phone, kind of calling the switchboard rather than emailing a complaint or maybe something like that. So they maybe have more experience of hold music. And I'm wondering if the same holds true for you, if you'll excuse the pun.
Is the question, does hold music sound like garbage? The answer is yes. But
every time.
But I thought the most interesting part of his presentation, by the way, was the description of the multiplexing technology that allowed them to run multiple calls down a single cable. And the reason why that's interesting to us is because DigiDesign's TDM, which stands for time domain multiplexing, was a derivative of that technology. And they formed a digital audio company for a couple of decades on that tech that they basically inherited from telephone switching systems, as I understand it.
Interesting.
As it was explained to me by the guy who claimed to have brought it to them.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, for those, the TDM system was the first DSP. They used Motorola chips on those, didn't they? Which would then, DSP would get involved inside the DSP, TDM being the
first.
But
something about the multiplexing of the data was I think what was sort of nicked from the telephone industry and put into use. Now, I could be oversimplifying or even getting this part of that wrong, but I do know the TDM came out of phone technology, and that multiplexing is the technology that this guy in the video is describing is a way past that first patch-to-patch phone system that we started with and got us to where we are now. That sounds like crap.
If you think about it, that entire Pro Tools TDM system was built around Motorola chips, wasn't it? And Motorola, a telephone company. So I wonder if that's a...
That's
got
true.
Something to do. I think there's a clue there.
It could. Yeah, no, you could be right. You could be right. I don't know. Has anyone ever had to make or had any of their music used in a telephone holding system?
I haven't. But what we did once, though, I was driving to a festival and we had to phone something, an insurance company, I think it was, to arrange for someone else to be able to drive this van back. And it put us on this god awful hold music, but we put it through there was a big sound system in the van, really big sound system. So we put the whole music out through the sound system and cranked it up really loud. And we're all singing along with this. Oh, it's awful. But we're all like leaning out the window, so singing along with this whole music. Which, yeah. But that's, yeah. I think that's about the only thing I can think of. Yeah.
Great story.
But, oh, yeah. What I would say, though, is Tom Scott, in this video that you're showing, he doesn't really do music very often, sometimes a little bit, but he's just one of these people who just manages to find interesting stories out of everything. He's really good. One of the best YouTubers out there, I think. He's a very clever guy. He really, really researches things to the nth degree. Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool guy.
Yeah, I can see that. He's a former presenter of Gadget Geeks on Sky One, apparently. I don't know, Mark. I mean, it sounds like hold music could be subverted somewhere. There's got to be something that can be done to sort of, do you think the part of it is if you make it as unpleasant a process as possible, people won't ring up because they just can't bear to listen to it? I mean, it's got to be a certain deterrent aspect to it as well, right?
They could use the... They could use some kind of white noise thing, like the sound of the sea or something, couldn't they? Because we're told that's supposed to be relaxing, isn't it? So you could have this kind of thing happening.
Except I don't think you'd get you wouldn't get the actual articulation of the frequency. I'm going to say, hold on, Alexa.
I mean, the thing is, that
play me some hold music.
You need to know that you're still connected, don't you? Otherwise, somebody would be going, hello. Hello? I mean, if I leave big gaps when I'm talking on the phone sometimes, that throws people, and they're always going, hello, are you still there? I'm like, yeah, sorry, I was thinking. So it's kind of lets you know that that you're still there. You could play, what about farmyard animals? You could have moo. Need some kind of sound to let the human on the other end know that they're still, you know, being catered for or whatever.
Yeah, I suppose that's what it serves the purpose. We're still here. It doesn't really matter what it is we play you, just to know that there is a signal here. Because if the phone goes dead, you tend to hang up, don't you? So,
I mean, if you think about chip tunes, that's got to be the simplest kind of music. That would probably work. So maybe they should just all play chip tunes music.
Yeah.
Make it twee and Japanese.
But I think there's a really big license, isn't there? Because, I mean, you know, if your music goes into a pool that's licensed, because, I mean, presumably they download a kind of hold music pack, you know, to these large systems, and it just kind of, on Wednesday it plays Sade, or on Thursday it plays, you know, my ambient noodling or whatever. I don't know. I guess there must be quite a lot of money in it, although it's perhaps not. Imagine becoming a hold music millionaire. That would be
that'd be bloody.
Hold on, Gaz. Rich is just going.
Sorry.
Go. I'm sorry. I did once interview for a job at Muzak, who were the purveyors of not just music on hold, but elevator music and music in department stores and in supermarkets and everything else. And that wasn't the point I was going to make, but I forgot the point I was going to make. So now over to you, Gaz.
Sorry about that. I was just thinking about like contrasting what life was like for me growing up compared to, you know, what kids don't know how lucky they were, but how lucky they are now. We used to, go to like the telephone box, and there used to be a service in Britain. If you just dialed the numbers 1-6, it would play a current, it would just play one song. And I think they would like maybe a different song every day, or it might have even been a different song every week. And you could pay, I don't know, 10p or 5p or whatever, and then to listen to a song. We'd all be in there, you know, like four or five of us in the phone box, all like trying to listen out to this song. But usually we didn't have any money either. And when you dial it, you'd get the first maybe 10 seconds before the money beeps would come in. So we used to just dial one. We'd go into the phone box like every day, all around, just to glimpse, just to get a little tiny glimpse of a current song. Yeah.
Wow.
That's what life was like for me growing up in a little village in North Wales. That was thrilling.
When I got my first cassette recorder, it had like this horrendous kind of ceramic microphone on it. And I used to record music off the television when Top of the Pops came on. And I used to record music off that thing, and it was called Dial a Disc, wasn't it? And it was
one six
or something. So
1 6.
I do vaguely remember that. That must have been the beginning of my recording career. Not when I was.
Oh well, I'm glad. I'm glad we found some ancient technology that reunites you in a sort of bizarre kind of way. Yeah. Okay, let's go to this one because I see the time is marching on. What about this then? New piece of hardware in development from Soma Labs, who are the people who made the Lyra 8. And it's it looks a bit like a breathalyzer slash bomb or crack pipe, but in fact it's got a dynamic, it's got a vocal contact mic and some dynamic DSP in it. And this is the inimitable Vlad Kramer demonstrating it for quite a considerable amount of time, actually. I mean, this is not all like this, or quite a lot of it's like this, to be fair, but that, you know, obviously you could do some other stuff with it. So in case you were wondering what Soma Laboratories were up to, if you remember I reviewed the Lyra 8 a couple of weeks ago, and lots of people really dig it, and it just sort of struck me, he's a very creative and interesting guy. And it got me thinking a little bit about why more voice-driven technology isn't kind of being adopted, you know, hasn't really kind of resonated. You know, we're quite happy to buy an app on an iPad and hit some pads and sound a bit like this or that or the other, but the voice is the most direct route out of your brain and into the outside world, and something like this would mask it enough, presumably, to not feel self-conscious about the fact that it's your voice, but you are obviously going to stick it to your face. I'm going to start with you, Gaz, because I know you're a big fan of the of Vlad and also the Lyra 8. What do you think of this? This looks fun, but might be a bit weird. Yeah. Well, it is weird.
Oh, I think that's what they do, though, isn't it, Soma? They make kind of devices to make kind of weird stuff. So I think, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and I think your point is really interesting. It's something I'm always experimenting with myself, really, and with the rig behind me. I've got, I can route the microphone certainly through lots of things. And you're completely right as well, just being able to, just the amount of sort of timbral variation you can get with your mouth, it's a, you know, what a great oscillator it is, really. So yeah, more things to do with using your mouth, and I think this is really interesting. It's a pictures of what the actual device, it's all like kind of a bit hidden at the moment, isn't it? Do we know much more?
Let's have a look. I've got the web page up here. The pipe. But
yeah,
that's kind of it.
So it's all a bit of a mystery.
I mean, you can sort of make it out there, but obviously it does look a little bit like some kind of imbibing device or post-imbibing device, if you were thinking it was a breathalyzer. So as a box with a tube on it. So I'm not quite... Yeah, I don't know what it's going to look like, which might actually, as we know, impact the...
Well, I like... I've been experimenting with, I've got like the TC Helicon voice live thing here, and you can do like real-time auto-tune with it. So if you plug the microphone in and put the auto-tune and set it to be, you know, aggressive with its auto-tune, and then just put all sorts of sounds, you know, with the microphone, just put all sorts of sounds through it. And then the poor old auto-tune is just trying to sort of pull it into kind of some sort of, you know, to pull it into key somehow, and that's really cool as well, I think, is you know, so not just with your voice, you know, any sound, just scraping or bang, you know, just or anything you can get a little bit of a tone out of, and then sort of trying to real-time auto-tune. So that's a lot of fun.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, it's definitely worth trying, you know, because it leaps around and it tries to lock on and tries to pitch it into things. And, you know, and the more obtuse the sound you put into it, the more it goes a bit crazy and gets some very interesting sounds.
Actually, yeah, you get the same sort of effect when you try and pitch track in an MS-20 and you get those kind of artifacts that make it kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's great, that, in the MS-20. I know exactly what you're talking about. Sort of follows.
I mean, I know Golf Rap used it quite effectively on Lovely Head. And they used to use it live as well, and it was very unpredictable, but great fun. I know, Richard. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because lots of people can sing, but do you think it's the fact
that? Is that right?
Well, I can't.
Could you introduce me to some of those people, please?
Oh dear, having trouble with vocalists. I can't imagine a man of your caliber does.
No, well, certainly not in our band. But no, I just thought that was an interesting opening salvo, as most people can sing. Oh, really? I don't know what to think of this thing. I don't even know what it is. I can't tell. It looks like a crack vape to me. Does it make interesting noises? Yes. If he had a megaphone and a pedal board, would they also make interesting noises? Absolutely. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of this thing. I really can't tell. He certainly can make a wide variety of interesting noises with the thing. It might be handy to have it a jam now and then, especially late at night after a few.
Yeah, I take your point.
Somebody in the chat room said it sounded like whales mating, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, there is a sort of humpback element to it. Just to give you some details, Pipe combines a unique vocal contact mic with dynamic digital processing, has 8 algorithms: Orpheus, Filterra, Reverb, Pulse, Bass Drum, Octava, Generat, and Harchol. They're trying to get it to around €500. I don't know, Mark, again, you know, this reminded me a little bit of some of the sounds I've heard on your recordings, you know, in terms of just the kind of processing side of it. Looks like something you need to stock in your shop, right?
Yeah, I would, actually. I definitely would. When it comes out, they'll have to send me a few or something, and I'll put them on display. Where am I going to go with this? I think that music teachers are responsible for everyone thinking that they can't sing, because the number of people I meet who turn around to me and go, oh, no, I can't sing. I don't sing in tune, or I've got what's it called? Cloth ear, or the number tone of deaf, people yeah. that say that compared to the number of people who really can sing, which is probably most of us, because unless you actually have something physically wrong with your inner ear or your ear, the probability is that you can learn to hear pitch. People are just not confident with their voices. I mean, imagine that I've been doing a course in Bristol, and in the course that I'm doing on Sundays in the adjacent room, there's a lot of African people come in for a kind of a church thing, and everyone in that community sings, and nobody in that community thinks that they can't sing. So it's probably a British white thing. It's probably an American white thing, maybe a European thing as well. Although, don't you get Germans with the humpa, humpa, humpa doing all that business?
I haven't heard much of that.
Thing. We need to re-educate people from birth, maybe. And I'm 54. And I went to Gaz's house recently and sang through all of his wonderful electronics and stuff. And my story about myself is that I'm not really that great a singer.
I said it.
Come on, Gaz, you're meant to go, no, you're brilliant.
He did. He said that. So that was good.
I thought regardless of whether I am or not, I still have a confidence issue with it. Do you know what I mean? So
Alexa, is Mark fishing for compliments?
And I'm going to go to the other place that I was going to go with this, and that is I made an accidental discovery. Gaz was talking about playing things through the Helicon, and I made a horn thing for somebody in the shop, and he wanted something he could sing in and get a synthesizer sound out of the other end of it. Unfortunately, I didn't realize the man has a falsetto voice, so he can sing really, really high. And I put a bass synthesizer pedal inside this connected a microphone to it. So he could sing up to a certain thing, but he can sing about 7 notes higher than this thing can track. So in my experiments to try and work out how I could get his voice an octave down so that I could get all of his range covered by this thing, I started playing my iPhone through a Behringer bass synthesizer pedal. And then I kind of tweaked it and made it sound like a 303. So it had got like this kind of squelchy, kind of resonant, square wave kind of thing going on. And that is really interesting, because it's like it invents these kind of bizarre sort of acid house style bass lines to absolutely anything. So you can put everything through it. And then after that, somebody came in with an ultra octava pedal. So here's my hot tip. Don't buy a subharmonic synthesizer. I plugged my iPhone through my octava pedal and plugged it into a guitar amp. If you want more oomph on a kick drum, guitar octava pedal sounds bloody brilliant on the bottom end of a kick drum. It sounds really good. It sounds equally as good as a DBX 120 or whatever those things were that we used to use. They were expensive in the 80s and everyone had one. Does a similar sort of thing. So anyway,
can you tune it?
Can you tune it? It effectively, it's following the pitch of the bass drum or whatever's going through it. But yeah, in terms of the
but
music,
but presumably
it's
that's not
it.
Changing.
No, I suppose not.
If you play a whole track through it, though, it creates subharmonics that kind of add like a whole load of bottom end to your track. So it does seem to work.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. A very interesting topic has come up in the chat room on the to do with when we were talking about the Dialer song and that the band they Might Be Giants ran a service from 1983 to 2006 where they would put a different song on and I think I've only glanced over the story, but it looks like they may have even. That's what got them successful. I don't know if they had their record deal before or got it as a release, but they ran it for and apparently from 2015 it's back on as they might be Giants.
Istanbul, Constantinople.
Yeah,
this is it. This is it. Here it is. Dialer song. Oh, new recording every week.
Oh, every week.
Every week. Okay.
Mm.
Okay, what's happening?
Just one of their webs.
Oh my lord. I've got a big old problem. Oh, so they've just moved it online. Interesting.
Yeah, they moved it online, but they did it as a phone thing from 83 to 2006. Regular phone call to a Brooklyn number. And it consisted of an answering machine, which would play a song, or it would be like demos, jingles, or even previews of studio tracks, often with a studio message by the band. It's cool though, isn't it? That's a nice little
really
story.
Nice yeah.
So it is for a very long time.
Wow, 20 years.
Was it not related?
I don't know. Well, it was in the US, so I guess it would have been what fun.
So, yeah, that's just. I just thought it was worth mentioning because it's come up in the chat and yeah, quite interesting.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I think does anyone want to do the touch foot thing, or are we?
Oh, that is quite. I am quite interested in that.
Okay, let's do it. This is called Polyexpressive, and it's a MIDI foot control, which is just a surface that you kind of program and print out your own buttons, and it just got a MIDI out. So you make them momentary, and the idea is it's got positional data and also pressure data. So kind of bonkers, but could be kind of interesting also. Polyexpressive, let's have a look. It's a Kickstarter thing. They've still got a little way to go. One large XY controller or 50 switches or anything in between. You print all your controls, and then you just edit it in your editor, which is just like on a phone, Android or whatever, or iOS. And then you print out your paper and you're done. Interesting idea. Gaz, you seem to have an interest. I mean, it looks a bit kind of shonky in that, you know, it's a bit of paper that you tread on and you're going to wear out pretty quickly, but it's a kind of novel idea. Floor.
Yeah, there's some sort of cover that goes over it, a clear cover, I think, doesn't it? Over so you don't tread directly on the paper, but yes, I'm very interested in this because I've been looking for interesting ways to do with my continuing adventures in MIDI bass, with the industrial radio MIDI bass that I played with, and it's and also with the now. Totally fixed and working analog four. Hooray!
Hooray!
things like the analog four are brilliant in that you can do all sorts of interesting MIDI mapping to it. So the combination of that and that could be very interesting for MIDI bass. Obviously, when you're playing MIDI bass, both your hands are being fully occupied. So it's like down to the feet. I've got a MIDI foot controller that I'm using at the moment, but that's just using expression pedals. And although that's quite nice, this looks like it could offer a really interesting extra dimension to it. I mean, I've been toying with the idea of getting a Keith McMillan, one of the soft steps, or one of those things, possibly as a possible other solution for it. But I've always found that the Keith McMillan ones are a little bit small.
Yeah.
So this is quite the opposite, isn't it? It's a very large large
it surface. Is. I wonder, you know, what, because I mean, the first thing I did was I just went here and I said, didn't Behringer make like a MIDI foot controller? And this is the FCB 1010, which has got two pedals and whatever, you know, that many switches, which I'm guessing you can program up, and that's only about 100 quid.
Yes.
Whereas they and durable, right. And that's the Poly Expressive is 329. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Does it seem like a problem looking for a solution, or is it the other way around? A solution looking for a problem.
The thing you just showed offers tactile feedback in the form of the switch tops and the pedals themselves, whereas this iPad on the floor concept offers absolutely none. I have. Remarkably little use for this thing, and I think its best feature is that, being that it's already on the floor, when you slide it into the Future Doorstops Hall of Fame, it'll just get in there really easily and quickly. You don't even have to lift it up.
Well, I have another thought. I mean, you could use it as just a pad.
But I'd like to see Gaz blow me away.
You could just have it like a pad here that you could just kind of use, you know, upright with your fingers. It doesn't have to be your foot. I don't know. Mark?
Is there a problem with getting effects on guitars that I don't know about? Did I miss this memo?
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you mean? A solution in search of a problem. I mean, really? No, zero tactile feedback whatsoever. You're playing through the toe of your boot?
Yep, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Mark?
I mean, and this
one,
is...
Oh,
sorry.
Mark, is this...
It's all right. Go on. They can all interrupt me. I've been doing it to them for the whole bloody thing, haven't I? So go on.
Well, the delay is different on this system, so it's excusable.
It's just that thing about... This is one of the problems with a Kickstarter, isn't it? It's like, you know, I've got no idea of how sensitive, how easy it is to use. You know, is it can you vary how much pressure there is necessary? There's so many questions, and I'm just not sure that Kickstarter is the best thing for this, because I think it's certainly the type of thing I'd want to try first.
It does respond to position and pressure, apparently.
Yeah, but
given
but how much.
Yeah, but I mean, I just don't know how much control you've got over that, you know, and if you could vary the sensitivity. I'm assuming that you can. But
that's a good question.
I think it's gloriously ironic that you operate it with your feet and it's on Kickstarter.
Excellent. Good one. Well, anyway, if you want to check it out, I mean, there's 39 days to go. What, Mark?
Hang on a minute.
Sorry, Mark. I do beg your pardon.
Oh dear. I think I agree with Rich, actually. I mean, I've got lots of guitar oriented foot pedally sort of things, and the one thing that I was using for a long time was a Line 6 floorboard, which looks very much like that Behringer thing, and you can program it, and it's the longer floorboard, the Floorboard Mark II, I think. So it can either plug into a pod, or you can plug it in your computer and you can program it so that all the buttons do different things. And you can see the buttons and feel the buttons when you put your feet on them. And it's got a wah-wah thingy on it, which is very easy for expression because we've all grown up with those things as guitarists. This thing looks to me a bit like a whack-on pad, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Taken a whack-on pad and then just stuck some logo on the top.
That was, I remember the... That was all the rage for a while, wasn't it, for music creators, whack-on pads? Yeah, gosh.
Yeah. You had to have it with your Pro Tools system, didn't you? And it didn't really...
It was a bit too latent. Because, of course, we all needed to be drawing waveforms in our DAW, didn't we, if we remember?
Of course.
to fix
somebody
stuff.
On tomorrow as well tried to tell us that that was going to all be possible. I'd be able to draw the sound of a cello on a screen or whatever.
You have to have a steady hand.
The other thing I notice about it is it's in Melbourne, Australia. So if I sign up for this Kickstarter, what happens when they come to mail it to me? Do I have to pay the postage from Melbourne, Australia, and the import duty and the VAT when it lands in this country, or is that already in the price?
That is a good point.
Because what seems like £200 could suddenly very easily end up being £400, couldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And yeah. This Australia, yeah, it's quite, it's a big import duty on things from Australia as well, isn't there? So that could well be the case. And how durable is it going to be? I mean, if you're going to be stamping on it in gigs and stuff, I mean, it really has to be super, super tough,
doesn't
it? But I've
watched you play.
Well.
I reckon you'd break it really fast, Gaz. I've seen you playing. You need those man pedals, those big chrome ones that you've got that are kind of robust and indestructible. I can't imagine that would last 5 minutes with you.
That's it. That's the thing. Again, it's just like, that's the problem with these Kickstarter things, isn't it? Just that, you know, that it doesn't really exist. It's just a, so yeah.
Have you bought anything off Kickstarter that's worked out though, that you hadn't seen and then you got it and it was brilliant?
Good question.
I've tended to be disappointed. I like the Cord Bot. I think that's really good. That was on Kickstarter. But I know a few things I've had off Kickstarter I've been a little bit disappointed with. And I do wonder if that is partly because being a Kickstarter, you are part of the R&D team, you know, rather than a end user. It does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it? I've been super disappointed about a couple.
Bought something recently. I bought one of these. This is a fly by wire camera system that and it's, you know, it's $200 and you can attach quite big cameras to it, and it's servo controlled and you get all these shots. I think we could have it flying around the studio for some interesting stuff or not.
What did you get? A coat hanger and a piece of string?
Yeah, well, because of the smoothness of the... And that, look, this one, they were going for $30,000 and they got $1,000,000. It's just...
Bloody hell. Wow.
I know. So, that was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's another point. So, yes, I did. I haven't had it yet. No, it's not coming for a while yet. I'm trying to think if I bought... Rich, you bought anything off Kickstarter?
I don't think so. I paid into a GoFundMe project. The guy 2.5 years ago promised an album and still has never delivered it and got all pissed off when I asked him when. So,
does that mean everybody gets to be his A&R guy as well and hassle him for his product?
I don't know. I'm done with him. But anyway, no, I don't think I have. Maybe. I can't recall anything. That's not because I don't think some of it's been great ideas. It's just I haven't bought any.
Interesting. Anyway, Gaz, have you bought anything off Kickstarter? Did we ask you that question? I can't remember.
You asked me, but yeah, I said that, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. That's right. You're disappointed.
I kind of want to have a rage against something that I got, but I better not, really.
Okay. Maybe save that. Hold that thought for another time. Okay, I think that's probably it for this week. It's been it's worked well. The technology's held up well. It seems to be all good. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. Don't forget, we do have the Isotope competition. If you want to enter and for a chance to win Isotope Ozone 8, we're looking for the hashtag MaxYourMix and the hashtag Ozone 8 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc. That's the hashtag MaxYourMix and the hashtag Ozone 8 to @SonicState and @IsotopeInc, which is a Twitter competition. That's it for this week. I want to say thank you to our guests. Thank you very much, Gaz Williams, for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you aboard. I hope your session continues fruitfully.
Yep, I'm off to play Hammersmith Apollo on Friday, which I'm really excited about. That's a bit of a dream for me because that's cool. A great venue that I've never played before.
Yeah, it is.
Have you played it, Rich?
Yes, I have.
You have? Ooh. Yes.
Sometime in the last few years, actually. Not that long ago. There's a famous stairway on the side on which the Beatles took a famous picture when they played there. So you're walking out the alleyway on the side of the theater as you're going towards the street, you'll see this stairway where the Beatles took this picture.
Ah, there we go.
Ah, so cool.
You know what to do then, Gaz.
Yeah.
Well, so many people have.
Excellent. Well, have a great gig, and thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah.
Pleasure. Thank you. Thanks.
Also, thank you very much, Mitch Hilton, too, for joining us. We hope to see you again very shortly, and I hope you have a good, productive week, day, and rest of the time that you have to be productive. The rest of the time, I hope you rest up and have a non-productive time, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you. The pleasure is always mine. Thanks, Nick, and everybody.
No problem. And also, thank you very much for joining us, Mark. It's been a pleasure to have you. I must come to Glastonbury and visit your new shop. I really must make the journey. But so far, just been busy. So good luck with all of that.
It is really good fun. I really absolutely love being a shopkeeper because nobody can fire me for being rude to people. So I can... I experiment with saying things to people just to see what kind of reactions I can get. And it's just... I've got to start recording some of it.
Apart from the police, if you go too far.
I came in and I said to him, "You can't come in here with that red coat." And he went, "What?" I said, "You can't come in here. No red coats are allowed in here." And then the conversation just went sideways from there. But it was good fun.
That's funny.
And he didn't know whether to take it with a pinch of salt or not. And then we eventually evened out where he said, "Well, I might have wanted to buy something." And I went, "Oh, did you? Oh, hang on a minute. Hello." And I completely changed personality and I was like, "How can I serve you?" Anyway,
yeah, so I work in
it. Don't warn me. Any Sonic State listener who visits my shop and doesn't warn me, you will get that kind of treatment. If you tell me that you've been watching Sonic State, I might be slightly embarrassed into just being a little bit more normal, if there is such a thing.
They'll come from far and wide, Gaz.
I hope so. I worked in an organic food shop for a while,
and I really shouldn't work in places like that at all, because it's just you do just stupid things. I can't believe I never had my head kicked in, actually, because it was just things like that. But I think one of my favourite ones is this woman came in and she said we'd actually sold out of eggs, and she was looking for eggs, and she's going, "Oh," I said, "Where's the eggs?" I said, "Oh no, we haven't got eggs anymore. What we've got is we've got this little tincture. You take a couple of drops under your tongue, and then within a day or two, you start producing eggs which are pretty much indistinguishable from chicken's eggs."
Sounds like.
But I was trying to. I was holding this. It was just some sort of essential oil or something. You know, was smiling. And just this look of horror pass across her face as the realization of what I was suggesting.
Shortly before you were fired, right?
Yeah, I got away with murder in that place, but yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Anyway, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. That was Sonic Talk number 515. There will be more to come next week, and we look forward to seeing you all soon. Thanks very much. See you next time.